are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, how to retire rich. What's the right amount of exercise? A man is arrested for rescuing a dog. I wonder, have we handed out one too many honorary doctorates? And would you leave your kids with Lindsay Lohan? Let's meet the friends. She always knows what's shaking in the news. It's Erin Myers.
Yeah, unfortunately, a second earthquake has hit Nepal in just weeks. I will have the latest developments on that.
Worshipping at the altar of fun. It's Chris Martin.
A new study shows that America's religious landscape is changing rapidly.
If you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment with a review, especially a good one. You're helping the show by doing that because the folks at iTunes read your comments and they notice your five-star reviews. All right, tell you what, let's get started. Erin, you got a lot of ground to cover today. A lot of serious stuff in the news, starting with Nepal. Another big earthquake, huh?
Yeah, a big one, a 7.3, actually. And that, you know, comes just a few weeks, about 2.5 weeks after the one on April 25th, which was a 7.8. So these are both just devastating. And they're saying about 68 people have died as of now, and at least
from the new one,
and 1,200 have been injured, 1,200 plus.
Oof.
And that's in three different countries: Nepal, India, and China. And another thing that happened: a U.S. military helicopter, it's missing, and they were actually helping bring aid to people that needed relief, and they don't really know what happened to it. It's still, they're looking for it. They're trying to figure out where it is, and there were, you know, at least eight people on board, and
that's bizarre.
Yeah,
it was up in the air. They don't know. Was it on the ground?
I believe in the air, but there were no indications yet of problems with the helicopters. So they're searching.
I'm thinking in an earthquake, up in the air is where you want to be.
Probably, yes,
yeah.
That is probably the best place.
The safest place.
If it's missing, it more than likely was on the ground somewhere. It could be buried in rubble.
Hopefully not. Hopefully
could have been in a hangar.
Yeah, hopefully not. So we'll see. They did say it was having some type of fuel problem, but they don't know if it has crashed or not. They haven't found anything yet.
Perhaps unrelated to the earthquake, but just the same.
Probably.
In
just still
area.
Sad news. Yeah,
it is.
More
right.
reason why it's an inappropriate time to put out a movie about San Andreas faults cracking right along the California border.
When is that movie opening? Is it this weekend or next?
It's either this weekend or next. It's coming up pretty quickly, but it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and he's flying around in a helicopter to rescue people from this literally just world-devastating massive earthquake.
I'm actually surprised they're getting one of those to, like, the big screen. Usually those are movies that show on, like, sci-fi or something. So a big-screen earthquake movie, I think
maybe it's the magnitude, pardon the use of the word, of the CGI that they use for this. Because watching the trailer for that, there's that one scene where there's a tidal wave and a cruise ship is headed toward the building where the stars of the show are hanging out. I mean, it's a spectacular looking special effect.
Makes me want to move.
But I think you're right, Chris. I mean, the timing is a little suspect.
Yeah, it's not good. And when you watch that, it definitely makes you not want to live in Southern California, probably, either.
Yeah, right. I mean, you wonder what people are thinking sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you wonder what George Zimmerman is thinking. What's going on in that guy's head to where it seems like every couple of months he's got a run-in either with the police or he's in trouble and it involves guns. And the guy clearly is not stable, and he's headed for something. He's headed for jail or death.
Yeah, you almost think he doesn't think the law applies to him because of, you know, the Trayvon Martin thing. It didn't turn out how some people thought it should, and I think maybe he thinks he can get away with stuff. Well, now the latest is apparently somebody shot at him. A bullet actually went through his driver's side window, just missing his head on Monday. And they're saying it might have been a road rage incident with this guy, Matthew Apperson. But the thing is, apparently they've had other run-ins before, like two. Mm-hmm. So they have a history, and now they're both saying, well, he threatened me. And then Zimmerman says, no, he threatened me. So they're looking into it.
Did Zimmerman have a gun? I'm not clear on that.
He did.
He did? Was
they
he brandishing it at the time?
Well, that's what Apperson says, but Zimmerman says no. So they're both going back and forth. And they both had the weapons legally, so that's the issue,
too. What's the other guy's name? What?
Matthew Apperson.
Bad shot, actually, because Zimmerman's got a rather large head. That's a big target,
right? He does have a big head. Okay. And he did get injured from, like, flying glass, it sounds like. But so far, no charges or anything at this point.
Yeah.
Hard to not empathize with the people that just wanted to see this guy go to jail because he does keep finding himself in these instances that are almost just egotistical. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't think he thinks anything will happen to him.
Yeah, it's Zimmerman's law.
Yes.
Right? That's what he's living by.
Mm-hmm. So far, he's gotten away with it, though.
Yep. Okay. We were talking about movies, big Hollywood movies, and I'm thinking if that big earthquake movie was directed by a lady, she might say, well, you know what? Let's hold off on this. We can wait a couple of months before we put this movie out because ladies have more sense sometimes than the guys do.
They do.
But are they getting
fair treatment in Hollywood?
The attention in Hollywood they deserve.
Apparently not. No, the ACLU, they are asking federal and California civil rights agencies to investigate why female directors are not being hired in the entertainment industry. I guess they said 20 years previous to now, there were actually more female directors than there are that are getting jobs now. So they want to take a look at that.
Are there female directors out there who want the jobs? Or is
I
it
think
just...
so. Okay. I mean, there's the Angelina Jolies, and I know Elizabeth Banks just did Pitch Perfect 2.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those women who want to direct, but they're going to the men.
What's her name? Sofia Coppola?
Sofia Coppola. Yeah. Sofia Ford Coppola, yeah.
She's still directing, isn't she?
Yeah, but they, I guess, you know... just not enough, apparently.
Okay, so you bring up a good point, I think, because you mentioned the movie Pitch Perfect 2, and you talk about Angelina Jolie, but we see the movies that are playing nowadays and in the landscape that we're in, and it's the Avengers, and it's superhero movies and total destruction movies. Do you think it might be that women aren't geared towards that type of action scenario?
I could destruct things easily.
You could.
Or don't you worry. Or destroy. Yes, yeah. No doubt about it.
Either
you
want
to see a big blow-up scene? I have ideas.
So then you don't think it's just because women would be more geared towards emotional, dramatic movies, and there's not as many of those out there?
No, I think women can do anything.
Okay. No, I agree with you.
We're smart like that.
Yeah. You weren't just going down the men are logical, women are emotional road, were you?
I think men are more action-oriented, and we see action movies encompassing the landscape. And what I mean by action is action thriller. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Shoot 'em, bang, bang.
Shoot 'em, bang, bang, kill 'em, rough 'em up,
stuff
knock down,
up real good.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So what do you think of movies like Ted, then, where it's a talking teddy bear, but it's also very geared towards men?
Well, it's all, raunchy humor. That's another one where, other than Bridesmaids, I can't think of recently a movie where that type of humor is geared towards women.
I think
just a thought. I mean, I'm not trying to.
Girls can be raunchy, too.
Bringing up the other side.
We can blow things up and be raunchy.
So what have we learned? There are 3 female directors in Hollywood.
Yeah, right?
Right? Versus 150 men.
Yeah. I guess there are about, like, 50, they said. Oh, no, they took 50 accounts from female directors, so that was it. No,
right. Okay.
But there aren't as many, that's
for sure. But that's the ratio, 3 to 150.
Something like that.
There's more than 150 directors in Hollywood, naturally. It seems like there's 150 movies coming out every couple of weeks.
Pretty much they said in 2013 it was 18 female directors out of 191 films, so that's not a lot.
Right. Well, Hollywood needs to get some religion. That's what it is, you know? Because the ladies, treat them like gods. That's what I've learned in life.
That's really what they are.
Like
really,
gods. I have. Oh, us? Yes.
Yeah, treat the ladies like goddesses. There you go.
Yes.
Gods, goddesses.
Goddesses.
We'll see. You going to go down that route, too? Is God a man or a woman?
A woman.
All right. Fine.
I think God is gender nonspecific.
Yeah, probably.
Right? I wonder if God's happy with America right now with the latest statistics coming out about religious affiliation. Chris has that for you next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling. Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, Immortal, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke.
Thanks for tuning in to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Chris is here. Aaron's here. And so are you. We thank you for that. So, Chris, it seems that the trend over the last 15, 20, 30 years or so has been for society, around the world for that matter, not so much here in America, but in Europe and other places, to go away from organized religion. But it has, over the last 10 years or so, been replicating that trend here in the United States. And what's the latest on that?
Well, the latest comes from a research study by the Pew Research Institute, which I feel
Pew.
Like... Yeah.
Like, because they sit in pews in church?
Right? Oh, I get
that,
it.
Yeah, that's the first thing
it.
I thought.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure Pew stands for something, P-E-W.
It's some guy's name.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Pew. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Either way, they do seem to be one of the most trusted sources for information when it comes to these research studies.
Yeah.
And their latest report centers around the current religious landscape in the United States. And the top finding is America is significantly less Christian than it's ever been.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. Christianity still dominates America's religious identity at 70% of the population, but that's down 10% in the last 7 years. Hmm. And the trend is continuing downward.
Wow.
Atheists and agnostics have nearly doubled in size, and that's rising. You know the difference between an atheist and an agnostic, Aaron?
Oh, don't put me on the spot like that.
Well, I know atheist, Phil knows the answer.
Yeah, atheist and agnostic.
Agnostics pray when somebody they love is on a hospital bed.
Really?
Yeah.
You pretty much have it.
That's the only. That's the only time.
That's basically
really?
Right.
They don't go to church. They're pretty sure their logical brain says there's no God, but then again they're thinking, well, maybe there is. And an atheist is
it's just no God at all.
Yeah.
Correct?
It's impossible.
So
yeah.
Agnostic is like, oh, I'm having some bad luck. Dear God, please help me.
Yeah.
Well,
that kind?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
And Phil is giving it a comedic side, but the definition I think would actually be that agnostics believe that there's a higher power. They just don't know how to define it or
what
wouldn't
it
define it
yeah.
through like Christian rules and basic findings. But let's see. Black Protestants are the only group that is staying steady in the market share. So Black Protestants, they really haven't gone up or down in numbers.
Interesting.
Okay.
And the new major force in American faith, the nones.
What is that?
These are people who are unaffiliated with brand name religion. You might call them non-denominant. Most of them are millennials. That's another word that you hear a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
They make up 22% of the marketplace. They say that these millennials, non-denominant, nons, whatever, are more comfortable than ever with not conforming to religious beliefs.
Yeah. Well, see, the conforming requires commitment to a particular church, right?
Yes,
and
it does.
Going to the same place and being active in the church and all of that sort of thing. And millennials are not known for that sort of commitment, are they?
Commitment, yes, it's rough.
A bit of slackers, right?
Sure. Yeah. Another angle might be that they have slightly different spiritual beliefs than what those religions offer,
or just a belief is hard. It's hard to do stuff like that, have beliefs, right?
Well, and is that what you have to do stuff to have faith?
I don't know. I just have this, am I wrong about millennials that effort is not part of their makeup?
No, you're right. You're right.
Okay.
So if it's hard, they're not going to do it?
Yeah.
Or
it's hard.
Puts them out a little bit?
Yeah. There's definitely a portion of that.
Yeah. All right. A sign that it's the end of the world and perhaps everybody should go to church.
Uh-oh.
I can't think of anything that could possibly go wrong here.
Uh-oh.
Lindsay Lohan is going to spend the next 2 weeks working with children.
Oh, boy.
Lindsay is 115 hours short on her community service, and she has until May 28th to finish. So today she begins working at the Duffield Children's Center in Brooklyn. She'll do arts and crafts and help kids with their reading and do administrative work. Does that commercial come to mind where she drives up and hits the curb? She's in a van or something, and she talks to the kid who's coming out of school. Hey, kid, come in. I'm here to take you home. And the kid says, you're not my mom.
Oh, yes, right.
You remember that commercial?
Yeah, I do remember that one. Now,
and then
she
drives off and runs over a couple of cones, and she's...
I don't know this one.
She just slams into the front curb of the school.
So she's got a sense of humor about the fact that she's not a role model for kids.
Okay.
If she signed off on doing that commercial. And here she is. She's going to do arts and crafts with kids. She's going to help them with their reading and do administrative work, whatever that means. And she's worked there before. Had we known, we would have talked about it. But they say they're happy to have her back. So things must have gone well.
Hmm. I'm surprised that they want that publicity, though.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, Lindsay will basically have to work a full day every day from now until the 28th in order to get her required hours in. And prosecutors say if she falls short, they'll recommend jail time.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
She'll go out partying one night in New York and just not show up, probably.
I might have to wake up that that domain name that I bought, lindsayjailcam.com. I do. I have that.
That was very smart. It will come to play one day.
I own it. I've done nothing with it. But, Lindsay, if you're listening, can we set up a little...
People probably watch it.
Camera in there, sure. I'll split the revenue with you.
She probably needs to make money somehow because I don't know what she does.
Yeah.
Just more proof that everybody deserves 10th chances.
Here's a sign that maybe the end of the world has come already and we were left behind. And now we're going to live in whatever's left because American Idol will be canceled after one more season.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. You better announce it a season ahead so you can get some big numbers.
Is it? Really? Okay.
Hmm.
What's the world like without American Idol? I can't
better.
Remember. Yeah, yeah, I imagine. But can you remember a world without American Idol?
No, it's been on so long. Yeah.
10 years. Averaging an incredible 31 million viewers per episode. But it's been falling ever since the beginning. Last week's episode attracted less than 7 million viewers, which is still, you know, compared to some other shows that are on maybe cable television, 7 million is good, but 31 million is dominant. So, anyway, it's gone. Now, who's on? Ryan Seacrest, he's still there.
I think J-Lo.
Yeah, Jennifer Lopez is still there. Keith Urban.
Oh, and is it... Oh, oops.
Harry Connick Jr.
Yes, Harry Connick Jr. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
Right.
See, that's why it's ending, though.
Yeah.
Because you forget one of the judges or something.
They're going to have a big reunion and have all the judges and all the people on there. But one has to wonder if, from the first season, if Ryan Seacrest's former co-host, Brian Dunkelman, will show up. You remember him?
Only when I saw the picture online. I forgot there were two hosts the first season.
He joked on Twitter. Here's what he said. I knew American Idol would never last without me. Hashtag canceled.
That's funny.
I think he's a comedian, actually.
He is, yeah. I heard he's like performing comedy shows.
With a name like Dunkelman. Places. You know, another show that's been on perhaps one season too long, it's Dancing with the Stars.
I'm kind of over it.
Are you?
Too. Yeah.
I think America's over it, too.
And Erin Andrews might be over it also because she was caught eye-rolling. Maybe. She says she wasn't, and it was during a special moment, but I guess on Monday night, Army veteran Noah Galloway, he actually got down on one knee and proposed to his girlfriend live, and there's, you know, cameras on him, and Erin Andrews is standing there, and she kind of tilts her head back, looks like her eyes are rolling back in her head. She says that's her cry face, like she was getting ready to cry and it was emotional.
Oh, and so she's trying to hold back the tears and the eyes roll up into her head?
Yes, and people called her out on it, but she said, no, I was... Mm. Crying, that kind of thing. Yeah. It is kind of funny though, but I didn't watch.
I have a feeling she was just, oh please.
That's what I mean. You, that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
Oh, for ratings, that's what she was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about Rumor Willis winning that competition.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It's because I like Rumor Willis.
Why do you like Rumor Willis?
I think she's hot.
That's what I was wondering.
But not in a conventional way. You know,
she's
it's different looking. It's more the vibe that she puts off.
Well, you know, what was the point of this season? They should just hand the trophy to Nastia.
I don't know who that is.
Nastia Lukin?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nastia Lukin.
Yes, yeah, the gymnast.
The athlete is going to win in almost every case.
Yeah, the trend goes that way, doesn't it? Yeah, it's like nine football players
and
have
a gymnast
won that
knows how to. I mean, they've got like ballet training, right?
Well, those ones do, the ones that are that good. But I will tell you this: I was a gymnast for a while, and my rhythm is so bad.
Well,
I cannot dance.
You were not anywhere close. No offense to the level.
I was trying for a college scholarship at least, though. I wasn't horrible.
But she was one of the best has to offer, and they have that floor routine where they go out there and they're basically dancing.
Beginner next to her. Right? Yes. Oh yeah, they dance. They do all sorts of training. So, yes, she has an advantage for sure.
So, as a gymnast, you sucked?
I didn't suck. I was good until I realized that, if I fall, I can hurt myself.
Oh.
And then once that fear sets in, you cannot do it anymore because then you start to actually psych yourself out. And I've landed on my head quite a few times.
Oh.
That's what's wrong with me.
And that'll give you neck pain.
Yes, it does. I think I still have pains from gymnastics many years later.
Right.
And I still have calluses on my hands.
Yeah. Well, see, your growth wasn't stunted, so you obviously didn't...
Actually...
Oh, really?
I was like 4'11 until I quit, and with the time of quitting gymnastics, within 6 months, I grew like 5 inches.
Isn't that weird how that happens?
Yep. It was very strange. I went from this little tiny thing to like 5'5". And my parents were kind of like shocked because all of a sudden I went from looking 12 to more like a 14-year-old.
Yeah, right. And so now you're a grown lady. You get your period and all those things that gymnasts don't get.
Oh,
right?
Boy.
Yeah.
Well, that's been going on for a while.
Okay,
so
good.
That's way, way past.
All right, fine. Fine. All right. I'm not a doctor. But you know who is a doctor now?
Gymnasts go into menopause? Is that what you're saying?
No, they just... It's weird.
They stay like teeny for a long time. Because you exercise too much. It stunts your growth, I think.
It's an excellent question, though. I'm glad you asked it, even though I was throwing in your direction for the next story.
Yes, you were, and I cut you off, so please.
Do you remember what I said?
Something about a doctor? Oh, doctor. Uh-huh. Yeah. Paging Dr. West.
Who's that?
Kanye West.
Oh, please.
No.
Was just given an honorary doctorate from the School of Art in Chicago yesterday. He was able to stay still the entire time. That was 90 minutes of being able to sit there without running up on stage and cutting anybody off. He was given the doctorates for his transformative and genre-defying works. And in his speech, he spoke about George Bush, saying he thinks he's a great painter. He got a lot of laughs. He was funny. He was engaging. He did a good job. He talked about how nervous he was. And he did attend Chicago State University and the Academy of Art when he was younger, but he dropped out to make his first album, which was actually called College Dropout.
Yeah, when he wasn't on
so
a track to becoming a PhD.
You give him a doctorate for that? No, he should have to go back to school and get a
real one. You give him a doctorate for his transformative and genre-defying works in music.
That's judgment, or not judgmental, that's...
Subjective.
Yes, exactly. Sorry about that.
Hey, it's never too late to start working on retiring rich. We're going to talk to somebody who will talk about that and money anxiety disorder next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. A little later in the program, how much exercise is too much exercise? Or are you right on with your amount of exercise? Our travel guy takes us to Chicago. Anaheim Ducks fans will be excited about that. And how to turn stress into a good thing. But right now, let's talk about this. No matter how much money you have, you're probably anxious about money on some level. Most Americans are. It's not cheap to live here, right?
Mm-mm.
Well, you know, will you have enough money to send your kids to college? What about your retirement? You know, the same old things. You'd think we'd have all of this figured out by now. Actually, some people have figured it out, and one of them joins us live right now. She has been a successful stock market investor for 14 years. She worked at a hedge fund in New York City, retired at the age of 27.
Congratulations.
Wow.
She now works as a money confidence coach and a stock market investing strategist to help people build their financial literacy muscle and understand the stock market and create a plan to retire rich. Plan? What's that? Tembi Buddhalese joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on the show.
Well, we're even more excited. You retired at 27, comfortably so?
I did retire at the age of 27. So I shorted the U.S. stock market in 2008 when we had a recession. I knew that it was coming, and I was able to hedge those positions and, you know, just make money as the market was going down.
So you got out while stocks were still relatively high and everybody else lost their money, but you got out with your cash.
I got out, but I also then what I did was I shorted the market, meaning that I sold at a very high price and I bought back in sort of 2009. So you can make money in the U.S. stock market going long, which means you buy low, sell high, or you can make money when the market is going down, which means you sell high and buy back at a lower price.
You know, hold on. I'm grabbing onto my head because it's spinning around.
You want to buy high and sell low, Phil.
I get that. Uh-huh. I get that. But all the other things, you know, the puts and the calls and the shorts and the longs.
And the bears and the bulls.
It gets a little confusing. Now, you're right there in the middle of the forest, and I can't see the trees.
I think that's what Wall Street doesn't want a Main Street to know, right? As a Main Street, people think, oh, the only way you can make money in the markets is by buying low and selling high. But when you really look at what happens on Wall Street, majority of the people make more money when there is a recession or when the stock market is falling apart. That's when you really make a lot more money in the U.S. stock market.
Well, good to know. I got to tap into that somehow. Now, retiring at 27, you're the exception to the rule, right?
I think there's a lot of people that retire early.
Really?
I think retirement is subjective.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, explain that. Retirement, is it a relative thing?
Look, for me, I had made enough money where I didn't want to work 100 hours anymore. So I wanted to have more of a healthy lifestyle, like, you know, going out hiking and, you know, rock climbing and skiing in the winter. So some people just are craving more money. They'll never retire. For me, I knew what I wanted and I'd had enough money, so I was able to walk away.
Okay.
So I think it's really subjective.
I'm getting anxiety just having this conversation. I mean, you're a lovely woman. It's wonderful to speak with you. But the whole idea of money and investing is it makes a person anxious. So you talk about something called money anxiety disorder. Is that a real disorder or is it something that you use to explain what people go through?
No, it's actually a real disorder. The APA, which is the Association American Psychological Association, actually did a study in 2008, and they said Americans worry more about money than anything else. So they actually coined the term money anxiety disorder. It's actually a real disorder.
Well, I'm going through it right now. I know. So let me ask you this. Since you help people to get money confidence, you yes. coach people on that. What's the first step we should take to get our financial house in order?
I think the first step is looking at your home, looking at your environment. When you look at your fridge, there is a lot of food that you're throwing away. I did this when I first moved to America. I used to buy so much food at Costco, and then I would throw away most of that food. That was like, so if I bought $100 worth of food, $30 of that would end up in the bin. That creates money anxiety because you're unconsciously spending your money and you're just throwing it away. The second thing is your bills. If bills come in, pay them immediately or sort them out, you know, just file them properly. When you don't pay your bills on time, you get hit with interest payments and mm-hmm. you get hit with late fees. That creates more anxiety in your life.
So you should say when the bills arrive at my house in the mail, I should actually open the envelope.
Open the envelopes.
Yes.
The first thing to do. You know what's going on with your money at that point.
All right. What else? Do you have a handful of favorite investment instruments you think everybody should have in their portfolio?
I think the first thing to do, I mean, I don't give stock tips. What I say to people, you should ask one stupid money question a month. Like the first thing you should do, call up your financial advisor and say to them, hey, can you explain the stock market cycles? If your financial advisor can't explain that, then you probably should find someone else. Because the U.S. stock market goes up in cycles. It's usually sort of 5 to 7 years up, 2 years down. 5 to 7 years up. 2 years down. It's called the Fibonacci cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And your financial advisor should be able to advise you when we should anticipate a correction in the market and what you should do. That's really important. Just asking, not being afraid to look stupid. This is your money.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people worry. There's so much risk. They're thinking, okay, I don't understand this. The bottom could drop out. I could lose my nest egg. I just kind of like to park my money somewhere. And so immediately the stupid question is mutual funds, annuities. I mean, where do I park my money? Now, those are not stock tips. You could talk about those, can't you?
You know, I don't invest in mutual funds. I don't invest in annuities. They just don't have that great of a return. They're safe somewhat. However, they are susceptible to a correction in the stock market. So everything is susceptible. I love individual stocks because I can short them. So I can buy low, sell high. I can sell high and buy back at a lower price. So I can make money either direction. With mutual funds, you can't. With annuities, you can't. You just stuck. And you pay so much money for the management of these mutual funds. I would never advise any of my clients, you know, to be heavily invested in mutual funds. You have to be diversified.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, but let's break it down to the basic problem that most people have. Mm-hmm. Is finding enough money at the end of the month to put towards something, like some sort of investment. It seems like there's more month at the end of the paycheck than there is paycheck at the end of the month for most people.
Definitely. But I think if we stopped spending unconsciously, you would find a lot of money. I'm just going back to my example when I first moved to the U.S. I used to throw away $30 out of every $100 grocery bill that I had. So if you think about it, every week you go out and buy food, that's $120 that you're putting in the bin, right?
Yeah.
That's money you can start investing with. So there's all this money all around. If you look at your home, there's a lot of clothing that you don't need. You could sell that on eBay. There's a lot of stuff that you have in your house that's just cluttering your house that you could just give it away or sell it. You can make a lot of money. There's a lot of stuff in your home that you can, you know, make to make money, sell it, make money, and then be able to invest that money.
Right. Okay. Good. Now you're inspiring us. And so earlier on, you alluded to the idea that retiring rich is relative. It's different for everybody. But what's your definition of retiring rich? I mean, what did it mean for you?
My definition was not having to worry about money. I, you know, paying off my house, having enough money to do whatever I wanted. So I just came back from living in Shanghai for 3 years. When I retired, what I really wanted to do was travel and not have a job. Like that 9-to-5 stressed me out. So that was my definition of retiring rich. For some people, it just might be paying off their home and, you know, going to live in Thailand. Yes. That's retiring rich for some people. You know, you can live in Thailand for $3,000 a month. That's amazing.
It sure is. You got to write a book?
I'm definitely in the process of writing a book on retiring rich and money anxiety at the moment, yeah.
Very good. And you have a website, retirerichnation.com, and we have a link to it on our links page. And Tembe Buthelezi, what an inspiring conversation having it with you this morning or this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Phil. I'm so grateful for you interviewing me. I hope you have a fabulous day.
Oh, it's starting out pretty well, thanks to you. Okay.
And remember to retire rich.
We'll try our best. We might have to look you up at some point.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Isn't she fun?
She's so cute.
Yeah.
Too. I love her accent. And
yes.
She's very smart.
Right.
Full of energy. Great mm-hmm. job saying her name properly twice, by
pretty
the way.
Pretty name.
Well, yeah.
I like it.
See, that's my gig. That's
mm-hmm.
what I do. I say people's names right most
that's
of the time.
That's why you're
most
the host.
Most of the time.
You know, what's the... Do you exercise? You go to the gym, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And do you ever wonder what the right amount of exercise is?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How are we supposed to know, really? How do you know? Maybe you do, but I doubt you do. Can you be doing harm to your body or your heart? Or maybe you're not doing anything whatsoever to help you get into shape. Well, an expert is going to point you in the right direction on this topic next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, do you have your track shoes on, and how about your yoga pants?
No.
You don't have yours on? Ready for your
no,
workout?
No, remember, they were burnt.
You burned your yoga pants.
You better not have.
No, they're just in hiding for a while.
Yeah. We're talking about exercise now, and our next guest is the author of the book, The Exercise Factor. The X is uppercase. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, and the author is Jim Kerwin. Jim, hi. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Phil. How are you?
Excellent. Even better now that you're here. Now, before the break, I posed the question, what is the right amount of exercise? Do you know?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah,
good night, everybody.
We know. And I created this formula to explain it to people. It answers two really important questions. The first question is, how much exercise should we do? How much time should we spend doing it? And the second one is, what kind of exercise should we do using that time? So to take the first question, you know, how much time should we spend? Well, the minimum recommended activity level for American adults is 3 hours a week, and that includes 30 minutes of strength exercises. So if you're not doing that, you need to gradually and progressively work your way up to 3 hours. But you shouldn't stop there. You should keep going and gradually increase it until you get to about an hour a day, an average of an hour a day, which is 7 hours a week. That's the optimum level where you'll increase your life expectancy and you'll also improve the quality of your life.
How do you know it's strenuous enough? Your heart's bumping out of your chest and you're sweating up a storm? What?
That is a very good question. And the second question answers that question. I created an acronym called the BASICS to answer that question. So let me quickly go through the BASICS. And I'm going to skip the B for a moment, and I'll deal with that at the end. But A is for aerobic exercise. We all need to do aerobic exercise, walking, running, swimming, cycling, whatever it is. I don't really care so long as you do aerobic exercise. S is for strength. You need to do strength exercises, especially as we get older, as we lose muscle mass, to maintain our strength. And then I is for intensity. As we progress, we do need to increase the intensity of our exercise. This is how we get fitter, faster, stronger. So it's really important to incorporate some higher intensity exercise into your routine. C is for cross training. Simply means just don't put all your eggs in one basket. S is for stretching, the importance of flexibility and balance, again, especially as we get older. So getting back to baseline, to B, B is for baseline exercise, and it may be a term that your folks are unfamiliar with. What it refers to is all the exercise we do from the moment we get up to the time we go to bed at night, excluding the planned exercise, going for a run, going to the gym, that sort of stuff. So it excludes the planned exercise. And that type of exercise has been totally decimated over the years. So we need to think with a baseline mindset and try and do things like, for example, I'm now on the phone. I'm standing as I'm on the phone. Go for a 5-minute break when you get a chance. Take the stairs instead of the lift. Little things like that. Baseline exercise, really important.
Makes sense. All right. Now, if you believe the news, most people are sedentary. And I see them at the gym. They show up. They put down their towel. They talk for 10 minutes. They get on the treadmill, set it on number one, and they stay there for 10 minutes, and then they talk some more, and then they go home. What is not exercising enough? I mean, if you're really sedentary and you've got an extra 100 pounds that you need to get rid of, should you got to be careful? You got to talk to your doctor because you might pop your heart before you get on there and start cranking up the treadmill, right?
You need to go at this gradually and progressively. The tagline of my book is ease into the best shape of your life, regardless of your age, weight, or current fitness level. And that word ease is incredibly important. So if you're just starting out, you need to focus on the baseline exercise. Everybody should be doing that as much as they can. Aerobic activity. You should start with aerobic activity, do a bit of strength and a bit of stretching. You can add in the intensity later. So you need to kind of build up a certain amount of aerobic endurance before you should really start hitting it with higher intensity stuff. That's my view. And it certainly applies for people who are sedentary, for older folks, for people who are out of shape, and if you're overweight.
Yeah.
So go at it gradually and progressively, and every day is a win.
Jim Kerwin, what can we do at home? Let's say we don't want to drop a couple $100 on a gym membership, and certainly there are ways to do what you talk about to gradually get into this fitness mode at home, right? What are some recommended exercises?
Well, I mean, obviously the aerobic stuff is the walking or going for a swim or going for a bike ride. But if you want to do strength, for example, there's lots of exercises. Just Google body weight. But things like push-ups, pull-ups, planks, squats, lunges, mountain climbers, jumping jacks, they're all things that you can do at home. And you can start with 3 or 4 and then each day gradually increase it to 5 to 6 to 7. Don't kill yourself. Work up a little bit of a sweat. You don't need to spend a lot of money on this sort of stuff, but just do it gradually. There's tons of things that you can do in your bedroom, you know, in your living room, in your kitchen, you know, in your office. I mean, things like, you know, when the phone rings, stand up and walk around as you're talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get 10 or 15 minutes of aerobic exercise while you're on the phone. 2 birds for the price of one.
When we start working on intensity, help us understand the difference when we get to that, what seems like a wall. And if there were somebody there spotting or coaching us, they'd say, come on, let's go. You've got more. But in our head, we think, okay, that's all I've got. But help us understand the difference between, do we push ourselves some more? Is that a signal to stop, or are we just weak-minded and we don't have the strength and tenacity to go as hard as we need to?
Well, it's, again, something you need to be careful with and that you get used to. And so, you know, gradually increasing intensity. So let's say you're a walker and you go out and you're used to walking at 20 miles an hour. Well, try and push it to 18 or 19 miles an hour for 1 mile. Say you're walking 3 or 4 miles. Try and do one a bit faster. Push it. You should be out of breath, but you should still be able to talk. You're not so much out of breath that you can't talk. I think that's a good way to start and gradually increase the intensity of your exercise. You know, eventually you'll probably be trying to start running. Running, you could go to 17-minute mile pace and then gradually to 16 to 15. So you can keep gradually pushing the boundaries. And all the while you're getting fitter and stronger. And of course, that's great for your health. But you need to do it. You know, the words I love to use are gradually and progressively, because then you're not hurting yourself and you're not getting injured. Really important to avoid injury as you do this.
We have about 30 seconds left. Tell us about Get America Moving.
Well, I want to get America moving for all the reasons really that we've been talking about. The vast majority of Americans, unfortunately, are not exercising enough. And there's so much that we can do to move, and we can increase our life expectancy and improve the quality of our life if we do this. So it's a win-win for everyone, families included, children. You know, we need to move more, and I'm on this mission to get America moving.
All right, the book is called The Exercise Factor, Ease into the Best Shape of Your Life Regardless of Your Age, Weight, or Current Fitness Level. That's the full name of the book. It's in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Jim Kerwin is the author, and very inspiring, sir. Thank you for spending a little time with us.
Thank you. Very welcome.
All right. I'm out of breath. I need to towel off.
Well said. Make sure you hydrate.
That guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're down with all of that?
I'm down with all of it, especially mm-hmm. easing your way into it. I see a lot of people try to get into exercising, and they overdo it right out of the gate. They hurt themselves, and then, of course, they go on another two-year cycle of being sedentary.
Yeah. I've signed up for gyms probably 6 different times in my lifetime, and one of them, my first day I went in there, and I hadn't been working out for about a year or so. So I thought, I'm still young. I'm strong. I'm going to get in here, and I'm going to push it. 15 minutes into the guided workout, because the staff there was, that was part of the deal. They were going to walk me along. 15 minutes into the workout, I throw up all over the gym.
I've never seen anyone actually do that in the gym.
Yeah, paid to see that.
Yeah. Did they give you a bucket?
Well, I got some of it on the rug and some of it in one of those tall plastic trash cans, you know. But it was, And then I continued on after that.
Good for you.
You always feel better after you throw up.
Sure.
Maybe.
Okay, fine. That's it for hour one of the show. Try to keep it down. There's more to come, including the Western Conference hockey final is all set. So we'll find out about one of the two cities represented with our travel guy. Plus, a woman delivers a monster-sized baby. Those stories and more. Let's talk about keeping it down. Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show, where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others.
And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, how to turn stress into a positive thing. 10 foods to stop eating today. Will having more sex make you happier or sadder? And you missed out on a bargain basement price at an art sale. The friends are here, Aaron Myers, Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. Aaron, you've got some more news for us. I know, so let's start here, shall we? With a lot of times people tell us to call the authorities or act. Or, you know, you see folks, they continue to park at the supermarket and they leave their dog or their cat inside the, well, mostly dogs, not cats so much, but dogs inside their car. They've got the windows rolled up and it gets hot in there, right?
It does. You don't want to do that ever. And apparently in Georgia, somebody did that. And a Army veteran, he was there. He saw this dog in the car. And I guess officers had been called, but no one told him yet. So he took action. He actually broke the window to get the dog out. And when officers arrived, I guess he wasn't treated very well, apparently. And they arrested him. They did. I guess it was the woman who owned the car. She demanded that they take action. So he was actually arrested for saving this dog. And authorities did say, though, if she hadn't demanded it, they probably would not have arrested him.
No.
So it was because of the woman whose
breaking
car.
Up his her
yes.
window. Yeah.
So she was trying to kill her dog, and he saved it, and then he got arrested because she was being a
wait
brat.
A minute. She was trying to kill her dog.
That's what I say. Okay. No, she probably wasn't. She
did
was
she get
just
in trouble
being irresponsible.
For that?
She did get in trouble. They did, you know, cite her for that, but I think she should get the dog taken away from her and given to somebody else.
How hot was it
me.
Again? Did they give you a temperature?
It's like 80 something.
Oh, then it's 120 in that
car,
Chris.
Yeah, it says
it
would be within 30 minutes. It's 114 within that 30 minutes of being in that vehicle.
Sure.
So,
I'm not at all for putting your pets in the back of a car or any part of the car while it's any sort of hot out, especially. Did she have any windows down? Did it say that?
It does not.
Well, he had to break a window to get it.
You would hope that, but you'd have to break it if you couldn't reach your hand through to hit the lock, you know. So if they're cracked and you have air flowing through there, again, not endorsing it, but also not endorsing smashing someone else's property. It's not really the proper way to go about things. I would probably press charges, too, regardless of the fact.
Animal hater.
I would also acknowledge that I had made a mistake, but that doesn't allow somebody the right to just smash my property.
It doesn't sound like the windows were open at all, and it does say that somebody, or he says somebody had said that the dog appeared to be in distress.
Would you have the same opinion if it were a baby in the car? Who was incapable of unlocking the doors.
My opinion would be skewed then, definitely.
Save the baby, forget the dog.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay.
It has more to do with, don't you have the right to not have your property busted? Now, I get the standpoint of why he was doing it, but Phil, had this happened to you, would you want charges pressed or to try to have some sort of action taken?
I'm thinking, holy crap, I left my dog in the car.
Yeah,
I'm a bad guy in this situation here. Let's just forget what happened here. Thanks for doing that. I wish you didn't break the window, but let's just call it even.
Yeah, I'd be that way too. I'd be like, I'd feel
all right.
bad.
Fair enough.
Especially if the police aren't coming yet. Let's not call them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, let's not exacerbate the situation.
Right?
All right.
Yeah.
I'm with you guys. I am.
Okay, fine.
It's not like my stuff busted up either.
We talked that through. Aaron, tell us about this 4-year-old boy who is probably alive today because he's watched his fair share of action movies.
Yeah, this is crazy, actually. This 4-year-old, he was in his car seat, and apparently he was in the vehicle when it was carjacked, and he was waiting for his mother when the car was running. A guy got in. Took off. Well, he jumped out of the moving vehicle. The 4-year-old jumped out to save himself, apparently. And he only has cuts and scrapes, and he's okay.
Like in the movies.
In a 4-year-old, like Daredevil, jumping out of a moving vehicle. I wouldn't do that, I don't think.
No, because in real life, you jump out of a moving vehicle,
and
you're likely
really
to get severely injured or worse. But in the movies, you just get a couple of scratches. You get up, and you fight the bad guys.
Well, this kid did just that, just a couple of scratches. And they found him a couple miles, or they found the car a little while later. They haven't found the carjacker yet, but he should be okay.
What's more painful, jumping out of a moving vehicle or
giving birth to a monster baby.
Well, I don't think any of us know really on that, but from what I hear,
my mom knows.
Yeah, women say giving birth is probably the most painful thing ever. That's what I've been told.
Uh-huh.
So a woman in Pittsburgh apparently gave birth to a 13-pound, 10-ounce baby.
Oh,
man. And it is the biggest baby ever born at West Penn Hospital,
How long of a baby is
that? 25 inches long. That's all.
That's more than 2 feet
long. Yes, for a little newborn baby. It was C-section, but
that doesn't count.
Still gigantic.
Am I being insensitive?
Isaac is the baby's name.
Does it say how he barely
fits into the newborn cradle? Whatever those are called. You can see I have kids.
No, you mean in the hospital?
The
incubator.
He's not incubator. He's huge.
That baby's done incubating.
Yeah, he might have incubated too long. Oh, my goodness.
They left that bun in the oven a bit long.
Yeah.
Right, but no, the room that they have at the hospital.
All the newborns, yes. He's in his little,
bassinet.
Bassinet, something like that, yes.
With the legs hanging out.
Yes, he barely fits.
Yeah.
He might need like a double size.
So it looks
almost like
he's in there, he's a teenager.
His head might be hitting the top.
Read the magazine or texting his girlfriend, but he's in the bassinet with the rest of the babies.
Yes, and he's probably double the size of most of them.
I wonder how he ranks amongst the biggest babies ever born.
Well, there have been bigger.
Yeah.
Like how big? You think 16 pounds would be max?
There have been 20-pound babies.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a 20-pound baby.
Right. There aren't even bowling balls that heavy.
No, there aren't. What's
really?
The max for bowling ball? 18?
Yeah,
16, 18
so.
Pounds.
Is that really?
That's like massive bowling ball.
Yeah.
I like the 12-pound ones, but not as a baby.
Mm-hmm. When you go bowling, does your thumb make that little sound?
No. I don't put my thumb in the thumb hole.
You just use your
You
fingers,
don't?
Just the two.
Oh, you're one of those crazy
spinner
guys?
You just roll it
guys?
Down between your legs? Like,
you do the crazy spin?
I try to spin it, yeah, and it helps if I don't put the thumb in there, just the two fingers, and then the ball rests on the palm, and you just sort of spin it from your hip. And then you get that cool side action on it that usually goes into the gutter.
Now, is that PBA authorized? Professional Bowling Association.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
What's the highest score you've gotten?
I've shot close to 200. 180, 190.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Hey.
I feel pretty good about it.
Let's have a team building exercise. You want to go bowling, guys?
Last time I bowled, I won 2 out of 3 games.
Oh,
wow.
Well, the gauntlet has been thrown.
Mm-hmm. And my name on the screen up top was Superstar.
Right. You got to come up with a creative name every time you play.
Forget fun. Aaron.
Yeah. I've also shot 35, so.
Yeah.
And that was with bumpers.
That'll humble you real
quick. Do they call it shot?
How dare you?
Do they call it when you're bowling? Have you shot a 35 or have you rolled or have you done something else?
Yeah, I guess it is rolled. You would think it would be a better term than shot or bowled.
Bowled
is what you say. I bowled a 35.
Well, how ironic is that? It's called bowling.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Were you correcting me sarcastically because you knew the answer? Or
no, I didn't know the answer. Oh, okay. I'm just curious.
I don't know. Sometimes I can't tell.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Poker face.
I'll hang on to that.
Keep me on guard.
I can't tell what Verizon's up to. Why in the world would they buy this company?
Well, I'll give you some reasons. But Verizon they announced this morning that they're going to be acquiring AOL.
Yeah. And AOL's still out there?
We might want to describe what AOL is to some of our listeners.
I'll tell you what it is. It's a place where grandma does her email.
Okay, right. Uh-oh, Mike Stark's waving his hand.
Where Mike Stark does his email.
Yes, right. Yeah.
He has AOL. Yeah, Verizon is making a $4.4 billion investment. That's what AOL is valued at, $4.4 billion. So obviously still a giant in the technology and communications industry. The CEO of AOL says, AOL as big as it can possibly be, but if you look 5 years down the road, we're going to be in a space where it will be massive global scale networks. So it's like the CEO is projecting forward and realizing that a lot of these conglomerates are going to tie in together, and this is only going to get bigger.
Was that the CEO of AOL or CEO of Verizon?
It was the CEO of AOL justifying the sale.
Oh, yeah.
He's saying, hey, we've made this company as big as it can be. If it's going to get bigger, we have to go to this global platform.
How about how big they were when they owned Time Warner and they realized a few years later, this is not good being as big as we are. Let's get rid of Time Warner.
Mm-hmm. Good question. They were big. Time Warner, I don't know what they're valued at, but
I don't know. I think AOL bought Time Warner for like $4.4 billion and sold them for like $4.4 billion.
Oh, they took it at a loss like that.
They took a hit,
like a good thing.
I don't know the actual numbers, but they took a big hit when they sold it. And because they bought at the peak of the dot-com boom when AOL was, if you had any kind of dot-com after your name, you had nothing but stupid money to spend.
Right. Yeah, and by the way, if AOL is not just an old internet portal that reminds you that you've got mail. They have built some of the strongest technology in hot ad and mobile spaces and owns blog sites including Huffington Post and TechCrunch, which are pretty large. So Verizon's really buying all of AOL's content, their delivery methods, their advertising. I'm sure there's plenty of competent employees and executives from that company that are coming over. I don't know if it's a good investment or not, but
we shall see.
We will find out.
You know what else we'll find out next? The pros and cons of having more sex. Curious?
Mm-hmm. There's cons?
There might be. You'll find out here on Phil's Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling. Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, I-M-M-O-R-T-A-L, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke.
All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. And I bet you're curious to know whether more sex is better for you than less sex.
I am curious.
Yeah.
I already know the answer to that, Phil.
Do you?
Do you?
What do you think the answer is?
It's obviously more sex. I don't know how that could be bad for you.
Yeah, I don't know. But the great news is... mediocre sex is actually, mediocre sex life is actually good for you.
Interesting. That should make a lot of people feel better.
A new study out of Carnegie Mellon University, which, in case you don't know where that is, it's in Pittsburgh. They just found out that having more sex does not make you happier, even though we all thought that was true. Did we all think it was true?
I think guys thought it was true.
Yeah, because we, as guys, we set out each day... at the beginning of the day, with the goal of having more sex, even though we're just going to work and there was no implied sex involved with going to work or driving a car or going out to lunch, the hope is that somehow during the course of our activities, we will have more sex. Isn't that right, Chris?
That's all, yeah, it's ingrained in our DNA.
Yes, it is. Now, the Carnegie Mellon people found that couples that have more sex are actually slightly less happy than couples that get it on less often. And here's why.
I don't get it.
When people have lots of sex, it becomes part of their routine. So they don't enjoy it as much. And sometimes they feel like they're just doing it out of obligation.
Ah.
So when you do it less frequently, it means more. And it's like, oh,
it's
this is
special.
Yeah,
then.
It's special. It's a, like a surprise. It's a gift. It's all
I
those
can see
types
that
of things.
A little
yeah.
bit where if it was every day, you're like, okay, honey, come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the researchers, here's a quote from the researchers who probably had to have a bunch of sex to figure out the answers to these questions. Instead of focusing on increasing sexual frequency to the levels they experienced at the beginning of a relationship, work on creating an environment that sparks their desire and makes the sex they do have even more fun.
See-through yoga pants.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. That makes sense because there is sort of that tipping point mm-hmm. where I guess it can be mundane routine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris, like the first time you've been dating a lady for a period of time. We won't say what it is because it's a different ratio for every guy, but it's a period of time and you've been working toward that time when, you know, in your mind, you're thinking any minute now we're going to have sex. But it could be days, it could be weeks, it could be months. And then the time when it does happen, that first time, it's probably the time that you remember more than any other one. Isn't that correct? Until the next time.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I think in a new relationship, that first time might always not be the most spectacular. But
it is the most special rhythm. Because there's that, you know, you're not thinking of it tactfully. What's the word?
It's
I'm
more passionate. You're right. It's sort of more spontaneous.
Yes.
It's like opening up a birthday gift.
Yeah.
right?
Right, it is. It's a special surprise.
Yes.
A special surprise.
I wouldn't. It's been a long time for me. Not that we need to get into personal lives, but yeah, I think that first time is a more
I'm
special.
I'm so good, glad that you do know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, uh-huh. Good. All right.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Aaron, what do you want to say about this? What's your favorite time to have sex?
She doesn't
when,
want to say
when
anything.
When you decide you really like somebody, I think. Or,
how
yeah.
long? And how long is that? As a general rule, how long into a relationship that has just started would you say that is?
Oof.
3 hours?
No.
4 hours?
Oh, no. Much longer than that, yes.
A week?
Longer
3 weeks?
Than that. I'm a tough cookie, so it takes me a while to decide if I think somebody is cool or special or not.
Takes a lot of work to make the cookie crumble. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Who says that? Talks about the cookie. Steve Harvey. That's what he calls it. The cookie.
The cookie.
Yes. Girls, don't give away the cookie. He says, or something like that.
Now, what was it?
Which how I even know this because I don't watch that show.
Wasn't there
very
a Limp
weird.
Bizkit song about the cookie?
No. Oh yeah, it's all about the nookie.
Oh, the nookie.
Okay. The nookie with the cookie.
Yeah. There you go.
Although Gym Class Heroes did one about the cookie jar.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, you got to feel like you're up for it. You got to feel sexy. You got to feel good looking and all that sort of thing, right?
Sure.
I'm thinking from a lady's perspective.
You
that's
do.
Probably important,
oh,
right?
It is. A lot of things make a difference with that.
From a guy's perspective, you could crawl out of a manhole and be covered in sewage and still be ready to go.
Yeah, and the girl will be like running the other direction.
Yeah. Now, this flies in the face of everything we know about Mondays. A new survey... the average woman says she looks her best on Monday mornings at 10:06 a.m. to be exact.
Okay.
Now, how anyone can possibly look good on Monday morning, I don't know. But the theory is that the weekend recharges you.
I could see Sunday as a rest day.
Yeah, and it puts you gets you to put a little more extra effort in to start the next week on your effort on your appearance. But that effort dies as the week goes on. And the average woman says she looks her worst at 4:05 p.m. on Thursdays.
I could see that.
Now, we'll assume that applies to guys, too. We don't know because they didn't survey guys. And guys don't put all that much work into the way they look anyway, do they?
No, not in this town they do.
Oh, in this town they do?
In Los Angeles, where we live, I think they put more effort than some women.
You mean there's guys blow-drying their hair and putting on makeup?
I have guy friends who take longer to get ready than I do, and it's
really?
Very sad.
What do you have to do, Chris? You get a little shave, maybe a little moisturizing, fix the hair up, and you're good, right?
Even shaving is you know, not necessarily something that's on the have-to-do list.
Yeah. Well, you know, the older you get, too, you got to take care of the hairs and the ears and, you know, stuff like that. Eyebrows start to get curly.
Yeah, no, but you're right, Phil. For a guy, I think you jump in, you soap down, you scrub your teeth, and then you get out, you throw a quick shave on, and a shave doesn't really constitute all that much.
Yeah.
And then,
well, lips are a little dry and cracked. Hmm. All right, whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I think we still look good as men.
Yeah. There you go.
We have that going for
into
us.
Into that manhole and work on that sewer.
It is true. Right. Girls that do have to try harder to look good.
No, I'm just kidding. Girls are beautiful just
the
way they are.
Here's the rank. Here's how women rank their looks on all 7 days. Monday best, followed by Friday.
That you'd go out on Fridays. Yeah. That's why.
Then Saturday, some more going out.
Mm-hmm.
If Friday didn't work out, you're going to try again on Saturday. Sunday.
That's yoga pants day.
Sunday going to meeting day. Sunday going to church day.
Church
right?
and brunch.
Yeah, there you go. Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday is the worst.
Weekdays, yeah, makes sense.
So it sounds like you're at your low point on Thursday, and perhaps at your most vulnerable. So guys, that would be the day to pick up.
Thursday nights, compliment the ladies.
Mm-hmm. Well, they already came up with a holiday called Thirsty Thursdays. It happens every week.
Yeah,
there's a reason that it's come about, and that's probably. One of the reasons.
Because we feel ugly on Thursdays. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. We'll go take advantage.
Good to know, because Thursday is one of the days that I can actually go do things because I work so much on the weekends. So that makes more sense now.
That's all why right. I tell all my friends, let's go, boys. It's low self-esteem night.
Oh,
time to clean up.
That's horrible.
It's going to be like shooting fish in a barrel.
Oh.
You know who was shooting fish in a barrel was that Tom Brady dude at the Super Bowl. With all those deflated footballs.
Yeah, he doesn't have low self-esteem.
He didn't have deflated footballs in the Super Bowl. Phil.
It was the...
They were regulating it.
It was the other one, the game before that.
Yeah, the Indianapolis game.
Yeah, right.
AFC Championship game.
Yeah, all right. So he's going away. They're sending him to jail, right?
Yes.
Yep. He's going to the penitentiary.
Woohoo!
maximum sentence, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Might get off early.
Now, what really happened, Chris? Stop your kidding.
The NFL hit Tom Brady with a 4-game suspension for deflating footballs, well, probably for the last who knows how many years.
Doesn't
but finally
that call into question everything?
What do you mean? All his accomplishments?
Yes.
Do you think you could throw a deflated football as well as Tom Brady throws one?
If you took into consideration that I'm a girl. No, yes, I can. Yes.
No, I don't think so. It's not like taking drugs. It's not like using steroids. You can't put an asterisk next to it. It's not that type of offense. But
4 games, though, huh?
Yeah, and the Patriots were punished, too. They lost a first-round draft pick next year, a fourth-round draft pick the year after that. That hurts any team, especially a first-rounder. And the team was fined $1 million. Mm-hmm. So it's like they hit all three heads of the dragon. They hit the owner with the $1 million fine. They hit the coach with the draft picks. And they hit Tom Brady himself with a 4-game suspension.
Don't mess with the NFL. You know, don't be messing with the game.
Interestingly enough, his season will start with a night game on a Sunday against the Colts in Indianapolis, the game where he was caught using deflated football.
And he's being replaced by somebody who's cuter and younger.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah. Now, you knock your lady senseless and drag her out of an elevator, that's a 1-game suspension, right?
Well, that turned out to be the entire year, and he's still not on the team this year.
Yes,
oh,
okay. Yes,
he didn't play that entire year.
I'm just checking.
Yeah.
Yes.
He started out with a 2-game suspension, and people lost it.
Yeah. Right. So that's why. Apples and oranges? I don't know. Deflated balls? Knocking your lady senseless? Hey, thanks. More sports here. Thanks to the Stanley Cup playoffs, a handful of cities are getting a little more attention nationwide now. One of those cities is the Windy City, the second city, the home of the Blackhawks. Our travel guy joins us next to talk about Chicago, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Oh, loving the times right now because my team, the Anaheim Ducks, is going to the Western Conference Final for the first time since 2007.
Against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah. Excited. That's going to be a great series.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be great for hockey fans everywhere.
A couple of good teams. And we don't know when the series is going to start because the Eastern Conference is still shaking itself out.
Who's going to win that, by the way, Phil? The Rangers?
Well, I picked the Rangers and the Ducks to go to the Stanley Cup Final early in the season. It could still happen. That series, Rangers and the Washington Capitals, is knotted up 3-3, and today is Tuesday in real time, and those two teams will play, and they'll figure that out. The other series is the Habs, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
That's right, and they're 3-2. Tampa Bay's up a game, right?
Yeah. Now, I expect Tampa Bay to come out of that one victorious, but, you know, stranger things have happened. Montreal's not a bad team. It's a very good team.
Obviously, if you're going to get 3-2 with a team like Tampa Bay, then you got to have some skills.
So it's making us think about all these different cities. Do I visit Tampa Bay? Do I go to Montreal? Montreal sounds nice. New York, been there a bunch of times. Boring, right? And then we've got Washington, D.C., been there at least once or twice. There's a lot to see in Washington, D.C. But and we live here in Southern California, so Anaheim's not a big deal. We know we've got the attractions out here. But then Chicago. Maybe you haven't been to Chicago. There's a lot to do there. And our travel guy knows all about it, and joining us now to talk about the home city of the Blackhawks is our very own travel guy, Gary Warner.
Hey, how's it going, Phil?
It's going good. We have the Ducks and the Blackhawks, but you're not taking us to Disneyland, are you?
Oh, no. There's no Disneyland down there unless it's Mr. Toad's Wild Ride on the ice, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So, Chicago, there's a lot to do there, isn't there?
Well, there's a whole lot more to do than in Winnipeg or Calgary, I'll tell you that. Although Calgary is a nice town, but it seems that with each step, the Ducks are getting into a better spot to go to in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so that's why we're talking about Chicago today, is they're heading off to the Windy City and going to hopefully have a good time both on the ice and off the ice.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year, too. What are some of the top attractions there in Chicago?
Well, there's the Museum of Natural History, which is a great spot. There's the lakefront. You can do all sorts of jogging and running around and playing down there. There's the Navy Pier, which is sort of an amusement park area that's down there. I'm a big architecture buff, so I love going down to the South Loop, which has been in so many gangster films. You know, it was the big scene in The Untouchables where they go walking down the center of the big urban street. That's right down there. There's Frank Lloyd Wright architecture. There's great food. Great. It's just a really great American town. It really is a middle American town.
Yeah. Well, now let's back up because you named several things there. Let's start with the lake because folks who haven't been there, and it's which lake is that? Lake Michigan, right?
Lake Michigan, yeah. Right.
I mean, it's the size of an ocean, isn't it?
Well, the Great Lakes together are just a massive body of water, the largest freshwater body in the world, and they really act like almost like oceans. There's waves. There's been some terrible ship accidents out on there. Old-timers probably remember the Gordon Lightfoot's song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Well, that's out on, I think it was Lake Superior. It just goes on for miles. It's not like a lake you look across.
Right. You see the horizon, and the horizon is water. Right. It's just a spectacular thing to see if you haven't been there yet. So you mentioned the Navy Pier, too, and it's got Ferris wheel and other attractions on there and carnies. And
yeah.
But anyway.
It's a little bit like the Pike used to be in Long Beach.
In Long Beach, right.
A little bit like a Santa Monica Pier. It's a, they brought it back in probably about, I guess about the last 20 years. Everything's like seems like the last 5 years to me, but really in the last 20 years. Never really, like with a lot of things along the waterfront, done some amazing things. It's a fun place to go.
But Gary, isn't the best thing to do on Navy Pier to get a ticket and jump on one of those boats and take a booze cruise?
Yes. Yes. Although, you know, I did that with my kids, and I thought we were going to get further out and be able to see, you know, some of the architecture. And I think we stayed within that little, you know, breakwater.
You went on a booze cruise with your kids. You know what? You go at night.
I do everything wrong, Phil.
You go at night. You got to go at night where you don't see anything but the city lights.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you can make up for it in a lot of ways if you don't have enough booze on the booze cruise. This is a town that loves to drink, and you can get out at night and just, you know, party around.
Now, we opened the conversation, of course, talking about hockey because the Ducks and the Blackhawks are headed to the Western Conference Final, both teams hoping, of course, to go to the Stanley Cup Final. But this time of year is probably, I don't know, I'm guessing the best time of year to go to Chicago because I imagine you want to avoid winter at any cost.
Oh, yeah, and winter lasts a long time there. I went to opening day in Wrigley Field 1 year, and it felt like a January game in Green Bay. It was just so cold. And, by May, June, it starts to get that sticky feeling around Chicago, and the mornings will start out really hot and intense, and then boom, you'll have a thunderstorm. It all clears out, and it feels really nice.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we want to avoid winter, which is about 9 months long.
Right.
And you mentioned Wrigley. You got to take in a baseball game if you can, because that's a piece of history. I don't know how much longer they're going to keep that field there, hopefully forever.
Oh, I think they'll keep it there a long time. Like the folks at Fenway Park, they realize they've got a gym there, and they'll find other ways to maximize the amount of money they'll be able to make there. Eventually, maybe some owner's going to come along and want to move away anyway. But you know, they get a slice of the revenue of the entrepreneurs who over the years put stands on top of the buildings across the street. I mean, it's that close that you could have people pay to see the game from a building across the street. It's a real neighborhood, Wrigleyville. Whether there's a ball game going on or not. If you're there for the Blackhawks and you don't have a ticket or something like that, go up to Wrigleyville. That's really the place to go. There's great sports bars, and people will be cheering along. They might not be cheering for the Ducks, but, hey, it's a great spot.
And try to time your trip, really, around your local baseball team so you could be there when the team is on the road, because you have two choices. You have an American League team and a National League team, so you have a pretty good shot at nailing one of them when you're
and
there.
And even more than that, Phil, I'll tell you a secret about Chicago, which you can really only do in Chicago and New York sometimes. But Chicago, for many years, they only played day baseball games at Wrigley Field. Finally, TV forced them to put lights in. But they still play a lot of games during the day, and there's a couple of times a year where the Cubs, the National League team, are playing during the day, and the White Sox, the American League team, are playing at night. And
oh,
I've done this.
Doubleheader.
Yeah, doubleheader with a beer stop in between, you know, because you can take the elevated train between the two, and it's a great day. It's just a great day.
You know, one more thing. There's a lot of gangster history in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any, because I know you like the museums, but is there any historical gangster trip you can take through?
Well, the Blackstone Hotel, which is an old hotel that's down on the South Loop, but off of Michigan Avenue, that used to be where Al Capone lived. In fact, you may remember the famous Geraldo Rivera, the secret vaults of Al Capone, which turned out to have nothing but sand in them.
Right.
They were down in the basement of the Blackstone there. But there's all these secret compartments in the Blackstone so that he could get in, get out, that kind of place. But, you know, you can go find all the spots where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre happened, you know, specific murders and stuff like that. There's just that feeling. One of the great things about downtown Chicago, because they have the north area, Miracle Mile, lots of shopping, really nice. But they have the South Loop, which they've really preserved with these turn-of-the-century muscular brick buildings. They really give you that feeling that, like, yeah, somebody could come around the corner with a Tommy gun at you any day.
Tommy gun, I love that. Gary Warner, I love talking with you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and we are going to continue the program now with a couple of things. First of all, up next, we tend to wear flip-flops at the most unfortunate times.
But they're so comfy.
Aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, but I've got a list of the 6 times you should absolutely never wear flip-flops. All right? You interested in know what those are?
Kind of, because I want to see how many of those I've actually done.
Yeah. Plus, I know you're stressed out. Who isn't these days? Our next guest will reveal to you the, believe it or not, the upside of stress. There really is an upside. That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Do you wear the flip-flops? Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah. You wear them all the time?
Only to the beach, really. And if I'm sort of lounging around the house, I might throw a pair on.
Here are the 6 times you should never wear flip-flops.
When you're wearing socks should be number one.
Yeah, I concur.
That's a look, isn't it? When you're walking the dog. Study found in 2009 that 18,000 different types of bacteria on one pair of flip-flops, including fecal matter. Your shoes get covered with bacteria, too, but just on the outside. So you shouldn't be walking out there with your dog with your flip-flops on.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Anytime you're walking a long way or might have to run, a study back in 2008 found that flip-flops make you take shorter strides, so you're more likely to fall, and it can also lead to problems with your knees, hips, ankles, and spine. Number 3, this seems like an obvious one, but I've broken this rule a bunch of times. When you're mowing the lawn.
Yeah, that does seem like an obvious one.
Yeah.
That could be dangerous.
How about when you're cooking? You have to worry about things like boiling water, grease splatters, and knives that might drop. And so, you know, no flip-flops. Don't cook naked either. That's probably not a good idea. But that's another topic. Anywhere that's crowded, eventually some guy in steel-toed boots will step on your foot, and you'll understand why. And again, you'll have to worry about foot smell when you're in a crowded area, because that happens a lot with those types of shoes, right? Take them in the shower and scrub them down every now and then.
You do need to wash your flip-flops, yes.
Yeah. And when you're driving, it's not actually illegal. That's a myth. But lots of people think it should be because they can fall off or get wedged under the pedals and then create a situation where you can't stop or you're going too fast. And
you panic and just hammer the gas.
Yeah, exactly. And the next thing you know, you're into a wall.
How come high-class events aren't on that list?
That's what I was thinking. It was going to say stuff like that.
Weddings or church.
Maybe that's number 7.
Oh, okay.
This was the top 6.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. on a job interview. If that would be on the list.
If I was getting married, though, if you can't see your feet, I think flip-flops are just fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
If you have a dress long enough to cover it.
Then you're comfortable and nobody can
tell. Yeah, see, that's the thing. If you're wearing flip-flops, you're relaxed, right?
Yes.
You are stress-free, more or less.
You won't be the runaway bride. And if you are, you don't have to throw your heels off while you're running down the aisle.
Look at that. See?
When they go to take off the garter belt, though, your secret will be revealed.
That is true. But you just make sure they have sequins on them or something. You know, they're pretty flip-flops.
Sequined flip-flops.
They exist.
Yeah, right. So the mention of stress there was purposeful, the one that you guys all missed, because there's a book out called The Upside of Stress, Why Stress is Good for You and How to Get Good at It. Get good at stress? The author of the book is a PhD, a psychologist at Stanford, and Kelly McGonigal joins us now to talk about how we can use our stress to our advantage. Dr. McGonigal, we're all stressed out constantly, it seems. Are there steps that we could take to get a hold of this nervous energy and turn it around?
Well, the first step is definitely to change how we think about stress and how we talk about stress. You know, we're so used to thinking about stress as something we should avoid or reduce. And it turns out if we think about using stress rather than trying to reduce stress, we get much better able to handle the challenges in our lives.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? This thing that beats us down and makes us sick, terminally so in some cases, can be a positive in our lives. And you say stress can be a good thing.
Stress can be a good thing. I mean, stress is what happens in your brain and body when you need to rise to a challenge. It's a physiological state that gives you energy. It can give you courage. It gives you focus. And it's also a signal that tells you what really matters. And if we spend our energy trying to suppress that signal, we end up cutting ourselves off from a resource that can really help us act.
One of the toughest things is being stressed out and you're just laying it on your significant other, or it's coming the other direction at you. Talk about the dynamic of stress in a relationship.
Well, so relationships are often a cause of stress, and sometimes we think about stress as sort of being a negative factor in relationships. But one thing that we know is that the stress response actually includes hormones that make us better able to connect with others, hormones like oxytocin, which is sometimes called the love hormone. And that's why when we're stressed out, sometimes we want to talk with someone, or maybe we want a hug, or we want to spend time with our friends and family. And if we listen to that social instinct, we can actually use stress as a catalyst for connection.
The love hormone, I love that. Hard to imagine, but it's a great perspective just knowing about it. You know, people often refer to our brain as a muscle. So if we're stressed out all the time, I imagine the brain builds up a callus or maybe learns from it. Is that right?
That's a great way to think about it. Stress basically is the psychological equivalent of working out. And our stress response even includes something called neurosteroids, which are hormones that help your brain learn and grow from difficult experiences, like psychological workouts. And that's part of the biology of stress. Even if you are going through something and it feels out of control or you feel overwhelmed, with time, the brain can still become more resilient and stronger as a result of having gone through it.
I got to tell you, you've opened my eyes to the positive aspects of stress, and I know we've just scratched the surface here, but there's more in your book, The Upside of Stress, Why Stress is Good for You and How to Get Good at It. Buy it in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Dr. Kelly McGonigal, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so that wasn't stressful, was it?
No.
No, not at all.
No.
Straightforward.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, you can't get diamonds without pressing some coal.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they say?
I don't know.
I've never heard that one, but sure.
Whoever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys.
Yeah.
The kind of people that go to auctions where they auction off expensive works of art.
Well, those would be rich people, Phil.
Yeah.
No, I've not been to one.
That's a different class of people. But yeah, it's interestingly enough, Pablo Picasso set a world record for artwork sold at auction yesterday.
And he did this while dead.
Mm-hmm.
That takes talent.
The guy's still setting records, even from the grave. Pablo's vibrant, multi-hued painting entitled Women of Algiers hauled in an astonishing $179.4 million.
Wow.
Women of Algiers. I'm just looking it up real quick to see what
it
looks like.
Does it say who bought it?
It's a really cool looking painting. No, that name remains anonymous. I think it's Richie McRich.
Probably.
Richie Rich?
Yeah, Richie Rich.
Richie Rich.
Yeah, it's a cool looking painting. It's sort of cubist. It's got some breasts in it.
So, that's why.
got that going for it.
I bet a guy bought it then.
A lot of different colors. Yeah, some art entrepreneur bought it. It beat out Francis Bacon's three studies of Lucian Feud, which it beat out by $37 million. That one was $142.
Take a look at that, Aaron.
What the previous think? Record holder.
Is that delightful to look at?
It's weird.
It is.
It's interesting, but it's weird.
Does it not look like it would look good on a mansion wall, though?
Well, yeah, sure, but it's one of those things you look at it and you're thinking, okay, boobs, pretty much.
Yeah.
Let's say 2, 4, 6, 8. Oh, there's a butt.
Oh.
This was clearly his sexual expression coming out.
It was one of the first things that I noticed also was the anatomy of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
You can just say it. They're there.
But
they're
then the
face.
Color, you look at the, it's an interesting mix of colors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what everybody was looking at.
The dude, when he was around, he painted like a 6-year-old.
That's why I don't understand I never became a famous painter. I just don't get it.
Pablo Picasso said it took him his entire life to learn how to paint like a child.
Did he really say that?
Yes. Yeah. See? I'm smart.
Yeah.
So my throwing paint at a canvas just doesn't seem to cut it.
No, it doesn't.
Check this out. Overall, 35 of 35 lots sold at yesterday's auction for a total of $706 million.
Wow. Did you have your finger on your face when you were saying that, your pinky?
It's a lot of money.
All
it
right.
is.
Wow. Now, a lot of people go to school and they go on a 6 to 8 year plan. Sometimes at junior college, they're there for 6 or 7 years. But this guy has created his own category of education and how long it takes to get it done right.
Yes, 75 years. Apparently.
Whoa.
A 94-year-old man. He actually just graduated, and he's one of the oldest graduates in the West Virginia University, or at West Virginia University. He got his diploma on Sunday, and apparently he's been studying on and off for 75 years, and he finally got his Bachelor of Arts degree. And he started in 1939 when tuition was just $50. And then he got drafted in World War II, so he came back and re-enrolled in 1946 and then had to drop out again because his wife was sick. And he said now, though, that he might take a break before he tries to get a master's degree.
How about that?
Yeah,
he
finished.
That might take 50 years to get
his master's. We are living longer.
That's
right. So there is a chance.
By the way, every day until next Wednesday is a palindrome. If you look at your calendar, today is 5/12/15, which is the same number forwards and backwards.
Oh, that's what a palindrome is.
So tomorrow will be 5/13/15, and if you flip the numbers around backwards, it'll still say 5/13/15.
That is quite interesting.
I thought that was a character from Game of Thrones.
I thought it was a pony.
Palindrome? Is it a character?
I don't know. Or a pony,
Palomino.
Yeah, some kind of mythical pony.
Yeah.
With wings.
Mm-hmm.
What about a word? Is a word that's spelled the same way backwards and forwards, is that a palindrome also?
Yeah, like ABBA.
That's a. There's
that's
another word
not really
for
a word,
it.
I don't think.
No, it's not. It's the name of a group that I wish would go away. But just the same, it's a palindrome.
Yeah.
There is another word for it, too, but of course I'm going blank on that one as well today.
Mm. Yeah, I can't get the lyrics of Dancing Queen out of my head right now.
Happy to help anytime.
Thank
you. We love your comments, even if you're an ABBA fan. Click on contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. Also, you can find us on Twitter at FAF Show, on facebook.com/philhewlettandfriends. Listen to us on iTunes, and thanks for leaving a comment and a review. Leave us a voicemail on the website. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Aaron Myers and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.